Joining me today is a very special guest, Canadian multi-award-winning director and writer, Stephen Wallace. Stephen is here to talk about Martini Shot and his latest film and other projects. And welcome, Stephen. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Yes, the Martini Shot. I had a... Now, tell us about the title. Like, maybe some of us don't know what that is.
Yeah, the Martini Shot in film terms is the last shot of the day. And, you know, in our film, Matthew Modine plays a character who may or may not be God, and he thinks he's dying, and so he wants to make his last movie. So essentially, he's creating his own Martini Shot, and that's what we wanted to try to discover.
Yeah, I love it. I love the title. And Stephen, is that you playing the role of Mondine?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I was very ill, you know, just before, you know, right around the time I wrote that, where they thought I was terminal for a little while. And so I wrote the film actually thinking it was going to be my last film. We actually shot it thinking it could be my last film. And life, you know, and I almost died, I guess, about 3 months, 4 months afterwards. But the what was interesting about it was that, you know, that movie almost gave me life. You know, it allowed me to talk about themes that had to do with life and death and how I wanted, you know, in a lot of ways wanted to be remembered. And so, I intentionally gave the Modine character, you know, my name, just largely because I wanted to. But just wanted to try to explore those things, you know, along with him. And this movie has given me nothing but, you know, amazing, you know, kick to keep on going and fighting the battle.
Yes. And how did you, you know, figure out the cast? Like, how did you know that Matthew Modine was the perfect character that he wanted him to play you?
Yeah, well, you know, I had met Matthew a couple of years before. We had talked about, you know, working together on another film, and he's one of those guys that just has incredible kindness. You know, there's very few actors that you would actually want to be God. You know, and since he's God in the film, we you know, I felt I needed somebody who could show that kindness and that. Hope for, you know, for humans to succeed, and he's like that, and so he was a natural choice for me, and he loved the script. I can remember at the time, he said he would only do it if we promised not to change a word. Your actor does that, you know, but he was phenomenal, and I think most people, and including himself, think it's probably his best performance in his career. He really create something different and special with it.
Yeah, and congratulations on so many awards. Best actor, Matthew Modine, and director, best director, yourself. And I mean, like, how does it feel to, you know, win so many awards? And I guess more are coming.
Yeah, it's been gratifying. You know, I never really did the film, you know, festival circuit in the past because they can be a little cheesy and, you know, and some of our bigger known Canadian festivals are known to be a little sleazy and how you get in and how you win and stuff. And so we decided that we were just going to try to do festivals that we knew had a lot of quality and had a lot of integrity. And so we started doing them, and yeah, we've done really well. Like, I think we're up to like 9 best pictures and 8 best actors and 6 best directors. And I think we've won another 18 awards or something past those ones, you know? It's been really exciting because we're not the typical type of film that you see, you know. You know, we're very avant-garde, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think that with, you know, by showing these things to audiences and seeing the response for it, it does show that, you know, independent film, you know, can be successful if you actually put it up on the screen for people to watch. Because we get people weeping at our, you know, at the festivals. We've been incredibly lucky. Some of the festivals have had like 500-600 people in attendance. Like, you know, we're playing in front of these crazy big crowds, and the response is always, you know, 2-3 days later, we're getting people finding our emails and sending off notes and stuff. It's really been an amazing experience. And also getting to hang out with Matthew a lot is great, because he's just one of those, you know, sweet actors. And, you know, and it's so nice to see a guy who, you know, he's got 40 something years of filmmaking and in some of the biggest movies of all time. And, you know, and he's not been given kind of that kudos that he's getting on this film, you know, in the past. So we're really happy for him.
Well, the movie is deep. It has, I like to say, elements of comedy, you know, with John Cleese, for example. Mm-hmm. So it offers something for everyone, correct?
Yeah, for sure it does. Yeah, it's, you know, I tend to, in most of my films, you know, I used the line before, but I like sometimes having comedy in the darkest moments and some darkness in the funniest moments. And you know, and I've been very lucky having a bit of a relationship with John, you know, in that John and I wrote a film that shoots next year called Cut the Paper. And so he and I have kind of this similar, you know, sense of humor. And so he was the perfect guy to bring in. He's such a amazing guy to work with. He's just a kind of a big bundle of joy, you know. And it was interesting, because, you know, I'm a fairly tall guy. I'm shade under 6'3", and both Cleese and Modine are over 6'4". And so it's like one of the first times where I was like the shortest guy. But we did try to make it funny. We tried to make it human as much as we could, you know. I find that audiences will be drawn to characters that enjoy, you know, like that are funny, that are, you know, witty. And so I try to have as much of that as I can, even our scary things, we try to put a little bit of that in.
Yes, I mean, you know, and it was like, it was a process making a film, of course. But when did this start? Like, and was it filmed in Ireland?
It was filmed in Ireland a few years back, you know, because we took some time off because COVID was a bit of a pain in the neck, and I was quite ill for a while. And so it's kind of, in a lot of ways, that kind of helped us, you know, because it allowed it to kind of, you know, marinate a little bit, and you know, and for me to take a little bit of time of choosing what I wanted and how I wanted to do it. And so it was great. And shooting in Ireland, I would recommend it for any filmmaker. You literally can point the camera in any direction and it's beautiful. Like, it's amazing, and the crews are great, and you know, the food is, but you know, the rest of it's pretty good, you know. And it was a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, was it in Limerick? Is that correct?
We shot most of it. Yeah, we shot most of it in Limerick, Shannon area, which mm-hmm. are kind of like cities that are back to right beside each other, kind of like Toronto, Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we shot at the famous cliffs, which are a little boat outside there. And, but most of it was shot there. In fact, a large part of the movie, probably about 70%, was shot in a castle park, which they, you know, which used for, you know, which has castles, kind of, you know, big stores, churches, all kinds of stuff. We just kind of, I don't think anyone's ever used it for that purpose, you know. And I lived in Ireland for a year and a half at one point. And I remember going to it thinking, we could probably shoot almost everything here. And they were incredibly accommodating and very helpful. And they kept people away from us, you know, each day. We kind of moved to a different part of the park. And that was great. It was nice to be able to have such a calm place to shoot.
Yes. And to get the right shot too, right? I mean, like, There's darkness, but yet there's light. And, you know, as I said, it offers, you know, people can take away from the film what they felt like. But what do you want people to get from the film, like, overall, Stephen?
I want people to, you know, to think about, you know, I think I grew up with two very religious families, and things can be very, you know, this is the way it is. And, you know, and our, you know, Matthew's character, you know, and again, I call him God, but he may or may not be God. He's certainly powerful in his own way. But I wanted to have it where he, you know, he was fallible. He had, you know, he was very much like the humans that he created, you know, that he's got the same worries, you know, he's got the same, makes the same mistakes, that he's not a perfect entity. And I think too, is that if we look at life as a kind of a learning, you know, experience, I think we'll be all a little bit more patient with, you know, people. We've created kind of a world now that is angry and vicious and not entirely fun for people to be born into, but that's really not probably what our purpose is, you know? So, you know, one of the things I like that we've seen people get from it is that they've, people who have experienced loss seem to really, you know, it's the film resonates with it. You know, you know, Matthew's character brings back a couple dead actors that he used to work with in the past. But a lot of the audiences, surprisingly, in some ways, because I'm not sure if it was intended, but have taken it about the fact that he's learning to deal with the loss of people and that he's, kind of learning that sometimes it's okay to let go, and which has been great, because it's like if people can, you know, get that kind of feeling, that kind of emotion from a film, that's you know, that's what we, you know, we hope for and intended.
Yeah. Can you tell us, or can you share some highlights, like some funny moments or a funny moment?
We shot so quickly, you know, it was so hard to tell, and you know, and I was so sick. I don't know if I remember too much funny stuff. I do, you know, I do remember on day one, you know, the first day we did, we actually had a shoot in London rather than Ireland. We had one because John Cleese was only available there and we wanted him. And so we went down and we shot, and, you know, and it was kind of fascinating because, you know, when you go into a film on the first day, you got two legends. They're the only two characters playing. It could be a little intimidating, and but it was great because, like, when you're working with real pros, they just kind of, you know, they want the scene to succeed too. There's no ego to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of things that I take from it. I take the kindness that was there, the fact that, you know, that I was very, very lucky with this cast, which all got along very well. They all loved each other, you know, a ton. They're all still in touch with each other. But we shot in 14 days.
Wow.
And so there's very few, like, we didn't even have, you couldn't have even cut kind of a goof, you know, kind of a goof reel at the end of this, because even though you have all these people who are comedians in it, because nobody made mistakes. Like, there's no bad take with Cleese or Modine or Derek Jacobi. They didn't make mistakes. Like everyone got every word right every time. And sometimes you get blessed by something, you know, whatever it is, you know, the universe or something. And it just felt like there was a guiding hand on the film that we were able to, because I don't think any of those actors are all, you know, pretty big, and they're not used to shooting in 14 days, the whole feature. They're used to, you know, Matthew, you know, did Oppenheimer, you know, kind of right afterwards, I think. And you know, they shot for months, you know. Yeah, you know, it's a big difference than shooting in essentially 2 weeks. But those are the things that I take from it the most. Certainly shooting 6 feet from the cliffs with no guardrail was a fascinating experience.
And Stephen, where can people see the film next?
Well, we're going to still continue the circuit on these festivals until October. In Canada and the States, we're going to be out in November. The date's still to come over the next couple of weeks, largely because there's a big push for Matthew to be in consideration for Golden Globe. We're a small film for those things to happen, but they're kind of holding on to trying to put it as late as they can.
just because we want to kind of get out, you know, the film scene kind of in that award season between kind of November and, you know, the end of December. I think they're going to see how we do in the next few festivals. And we'll either be out in early November or at the very latest or early December.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again. And Stephen, can you share what's next for you?
Yeah, we actually have a huge slate of films that are about to shoot. So we're shooting like literally three films this fall. And so we'll be shooting a movie called The Writer's Block with Barbara Hershey and Grant Green and Ron James, the Canadian album. And we have a couple of survivors for that. And then after that, we shoot a movie called A Voice at the End of the World, which has really terrific. But after that, we go to Paris and we shoot a movie called The Splendid Thing, which he's coming along again on that one. Developed a really good relationship with him, and we're actually literally today doing casting on the list of that. So literally, I'm going to be shooting for about 3-4 months nonstop, and then maybe we'll take a holiday.
Yeah. Oh goodness, it's so wonderful, you know, and I'm just so excited to speak with you today, Stephen. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I would love to make sure that, you know, I'm a big fan of independent cinema, and I find that a lot of people talk about wanting to see it, but they don't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, reach out to Cineplex and other, you know, theater and start asking for, you know, real films, ask for Canadian. Because, you know, and as you know, like, Canadian films get almost no distribution in Canada. And we're going to be very lucky to, you know, to have that. But there's a lot of films that deserve it that don't. And so I try to encourage everyone all the time, because I see the response at our movie and with 600 people, you know, in one city and 450 in North Carolina. Like, when you're getting those kind of numbers in those kind of areas, you know, we're doing better than superhero movies. Our response to that is that, but people don't know that, because they have to see these movies on a little screen on the streaming services rather than the big theater. And so I would encourage every single person to send off 20 emails. You'd be surprised how few emails it takes for them to listen.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. And Stephen, thank you so much again for being a guest on the show. And I would love for you to come back.
I would love to do that.
Joining me today is Canadian award-winning makeup designer Donald Mowat. And Donald is back on the show to talk about his work on Presumed Innocent, a thriller series on Apple TV. And I am so excited to speak with you, Donald, and welcome again.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so you have such an established career, over 30 years, and I've read that you love what you do, but getting into Presumed Innocent, what attracted you to the series?
Well, you know, I think, like a lot of people, you know, show business is changing, movies are fewer and fewer, and I'm not gonna lie, I mean, I think that, with fewer films being made, with more people watching limited series and people sort of in front of the box, so to speak, I get it. People want to see quality television. I thought, well, I do too. I stay home and watch TV. I watch these shows. I'd like to work on something that I would watch. I like to work on films that I would go and see. When this presented itself and Jake Gyllenhaal called me and said, hey, you know, Dee, what do you think about working on this? He had never done television. I had, when I heard about the cast with Ruth Negga and Bill Camp and Renata, I thought, yeah, I'm in. And I knew there'd be interesting makeup because it's very based in reality, and we have a whole kind of whodunit, which of course would involve some interesting makeups. It was very interesting, and the producers allowed me to put together a makeup and hair team for this project. I was in, absolutely.
Yes, and you've worked with Jake before, right, on Prisoners, is that correct?
Many times, many, many times. So I think it just timed that he was producing this, and I'd met Ruth Negga once before. I was, you know, big fan of her work from Loving and a number of other things. And Renata Reinsved, seen in The Worst Person in the World. I think she's sort of Norway's biggest or best export in acting since, you know, Liv Ullmann. So I was a huge fan, and we had all these great people involved. And so I thought it was a great foray for me back into television.
Yes, and it's nothing like the community, right? And you work well together. And you know, I wanted to ask you now is, what was the process like when designing a makeup look? Like, you know, take us through, like, it must depend, correct?
Well, I think the way I approached it was, you know, I really approached it kind of give them with my crew, with the entire makeup and hair crew. I really delivered, we delivered feature quality makeup for a television, limited television special. There are mini films, if you will. So whether it's, you know, the specialty sort of the autopsies and bodies and right down to kind of the lighting and the makeup of, you know, Ruth and Jake and all the different subtle makeups and the nuanced looks of people, we gave them feature film quality looks for television, which is something we don't get as often. And I think it just transitioned well.
Yes, like ensuring the look, the skin tones, and there's different makeup for TV and movies, right?
Well, that's changing over the years.
Would it be?
I think it's a great question because in the old days, when I started, it was very definitively television was tended to be more picture perfect. Everybody was overly made up maybe, or a little perfect, you know, especially the Lifetime movies and things like that. But I think this is sort of people are trying to, I would say people in television today, whether it's, you know, HBO or Showtime or Apple, are trying to make films for television look exactly like films. They want the quality, the lighting, the art direction, the production design, the costume design to look like films. And I think having just said that, then they would like people who have experience making films. So there comes people like me. And that's where makeup, they want people who have a finer or softer hand maybe to come in and do these looks and work with actors who also are movie stars, like a Ruth Negga, who is an Oscar-nominated actress, or Jake Gyllenhaal, and, you know, the subtlety of that sort of thing.
Yes. Because being a makeup designer and makeup head and personal makeup artist and all that, so you're very important to the scenes, as you know, you're telling a story. And how much involvement did you have working on the Presumed Innocent series?
Well, I think that very early on I was consulted. You know, we spoke in pre-production about, you know, having enough prep time at least to, you know, make it look as authentic as possible within the confines of a smaller scale, of getting the right cast, of doing some, at least some testing, especially for things like the authenticity of, you know, the young people, of the kids, of Chase and Kingston, you know, looking authentic, believable as teenagers of this couple, of Bunny, you know, being the first person you see murdered, and recreating a crime scene, which, you know, I really take a lot of pleasure, not pleasure in recreating a crime scene, but a great pleasure in doing my job in telling a story with the director and the cinematographer, of making this look authentic with my crew, you know, with Molly and Ching and Karen, and, you know, making it look like it was a crime scene. And having done the research and working with the coroner to say, does that look right to you? And they go, yeah, that blood and everything looks really correct. That looks, I believe it. Creating the wounds, the prosthetics, having the correct Y incision for the autopsies, you know, because people do watch it. And I do have friends that are physicians and nurses and people who go, wow, that looks really good. That, I believe that. Yeah. And I take great pride in that.
Yes. And it's a research, right? It's not just, I mean, just sticking makeup on, obviously, but studying and the character and of research course. And becoming like, yes. Well, and Donna, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to say, but I think it's like anything, you know, if you, you know, you write a report or an essay or journalism, you know, do a report, whether it's radio or television or a written report, and you take great pride in the authenticity or accuracy or originality. So it's no different. Or a person who teaches, or, you know, I think we all take pride in the work we do. And I think that when you're behind the camera as an artisan, you take great pride. I think a nurse takes pride in what they do, or a carpenter, or somebody who builds or makes things. I think it's the same for us, you know.
That's wonderful. And what do you enjoy most, or what on Presumed Innocent? What is it that you really enjoyed?
I'm so staggered by the reception that it's had, because it's not just some run-of-the-mill, oh, it's coming on tonight. People are so excited by it. And I'm really taken by that, because, you know, here's a show that, you know, is taken from a film. I think the film was okay. I didn't think it was an amazing film. If, you know, I say my piece, you know, it was okay. You know, it was an all right film. That I think we actually did a better job with the television show, with a limited series, because you have that time and you've got the whodunit aspect. I grew up on Agatha Christie, and I love all that. Like, I still do.